Welcome to Online Hypnotherapy Online, the podcast, with your host, Oliver Grantham, the place where we explore and deep dive into the power of hypnotherapy. If you're curious about hypnotherapy and want to learn from real hypnotherapists who are experts in their field, with real practical advice and real help, then you're in the right place. Join us as we deep dive into the world of hypnosis, relaxation, self-development and personal transformation. Get ready to have your questions answered and embark on a journey of self-discovery with us. I'm delighted to have with me now Shane Towers from Glastonbury-hypnotherapy.com, and I'll be passing Shane over to you very, very shortly. So if we're all ready to go. Hi, Shane. How are you? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you very clearly, Oliver. Good. It's lovely to see you. And yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Great. Fantastic. Well, Glastonbury Hypnotherapy. Presumably the answer to any questions that people might want to ask is in the title. So are you from or in Glastonbury?
Yes, I am living in Glastonbury in Somerset, and this is where I work from. When I see people in person, that is, but I have clients I work with via video link in various places around the world. So that's one of the wonderful things about the technology these days, is that it makes it possible for us to work with people wherever they are in the world.
Yeah, sure. And I'll ask a question, if I may, that is often asked to me as well. Is doing it online, hypnotherapy, does it work for everyone just as if you were in person, would you say? What's your view on that?
My view is it works perfectly. And there is no barrier to developing rapport with a person as long as the therapist understands how they work with people, as long as the client is open and honest and courageous in responding to the various questions that the therapist will need to ask. Like one of the things I say to people in a first session always is that I over the last 20 years of experience, I've come to acknowledge that I'm very good at this work, but I'm not a mind reader. So I can only work with the information that the client shares with me. So I encourage them to be completely transparently honest with themselves, first and foremost, in sharing whatever information they feel is going to be helpful to give me as the therapist as clear as possible a picture as to how best I might be able to help them as an individual, because everyone's unique.
And unlike face-to-face in-person therapy, I suppose with online, doing it online, there is an opportunity is there because of the online element to get to know the client even more before you've met them, if that makes sense, in terms of a questionnaire or in terms of them getting to know you beforehand already, rather than just walking in cold, where I can imagine many people maybe seeing a hypnotherapist for the very first time might be understandably very apprehensive. Yes. They won't know what to expect. This is the answers I often get from my clients at the end of the feedback session of the first session. Yeah. I say, you know, how was it? And so on. And do you find that seeing people online gives you that opportunity to maybe hit the ground running even more than perhaps you would in person, and how you prepare for an online session?
Well, I would say that it's potentially easier for the initial session, so that the person the client can communicate potentially their certain questions or concerns, or ask any questions that they might have about the therapy beforehand, potentially communicating by email first in the first instance, so that they're put at ease as much as possible before going into that first session. But there's another one of the associate practitioners on your website, Gavin, who I saw a little post from him recently mentioning that hypnotherapy is, or very often, therapy of last resort or last choice. Yeah. And all over the last, I've been doing this work for 20 years, and the last 20 years have taught me beyond a shadow of a doubt that the majority of people who come to seek help from a hypnotherapist may have tried all kinds of other things, all kinds of other therapies, and don't know what else to do. So yeah, I totally agree with that. So it's very much the case that people arrive knowing that they need help and not knowing in what way that help might be targeted for them as an individual in such a way that they can make practical use of it and lasting changes in their life.
The number of times people have said to me at the end or towards the end of their work with me is, I wish I'd have come to you first. I have tried everything. And sounds as though you've had similar experiences. And
I've had a lot of experiences like that, yeah.
And what do you think it is that makes them want to say that to you? What is it that's so different to anything they may have tried before? What makes them say that, do you think?
I have a strong couple of feelings about that, very strong feelings. One of them is that in many cases, the therapy which many people may have experienced has been largely listening therapy, where they encourage the person to talk and talk and talk and delve into more and more deeply and in greater detail their challenges, the intricacies of their problems. And the therapist just listens and nods. And then at the end of the session, they say, okay, well, we'll see you next week. There's no actual practical advice as to what to do differently or how to begin to change.
No intervention as such.
No intervention.
No.
And then the other thing, which is, I feel is at the very core of how I was trained and how I work with people, is people can go to see a therapist and they may have really positive results, which may be lasting for a while. But oftentimes, we're not taught how to change how we communicate toward ourselves about ourselves. And we're all creatures of habit, and we get stuck in patterns and habits of communicating, not just through words, but largely through words, but through repetitive imaginings, replaying old hurtful memories or imagining a future in which we continue to suffer in whatever ways. And if we're not taught how to change the stories we're telling ourselves about ourselves, then invariably we end up slipping back into the old patterns. And we do that unconsciously. And so that's something that is really important, I feel, that if a person wishes to make a lasting change, then they literally need to acquire the skill of communicating toward themselves in a more compassionate and less critical or harsh way. To learn to be gentle toward themselves in how they communicate toward themselves. And that can only happen if we develop the skill of being mindful about what we're actually telling ourselves about ourselves, the stories we tell ourselves.
Yes. I mean, by intervention, we don't necessarily mean, I don't think, any massive big intervention of any nature. But an example might be, for example, would it be a counselor who is just listening to somebody, and they are the patient client is replaying verbally tens of thousands of times rehearsed before. And as one pop song says, if you told something enough times, even by yourself, you're going to start believing it. I can't remember which song that is. Probably many a pop song. But just one intervention can be something like asking the right question, and then they'll reflect on that after the meeting, whatever, and think, well, hang on a minute, actually, yeah, maybe. And just that one question can begin to start a whole domino effect of questioning your own beliefs and thoughts. Would you agree with that?
Well, I would say that the asking very targeted questions of a client is really, really important, and there's a skill in that. Asking a question in the right moment, in the right way. And often I say to clients that I ask certain questions not necessarily because I'm looking for the person to answer that question for my benefit, but I ask the question in order to provoke in that individual that they consider what the possible answer to such a question might be, because ordinarily they might never have considered asking themselves such a question. And it's through asking those kind of questions that the individual arrives at their own understanding of how to liberate themselves from the habit, the negative habits or self-limiting beliefs that they've developed over the years. So this is a popular misconception about the use of hypnotherapy, is that people think that the hypnotherapist does something to them. And that's absolutely not the case. A skilled therapist will help the individual to evoke within themselves or work out within themselves how best to harness their own creative imagination so that it serves them rather than them being a slave to it. And the creative power of the imagination, our capacity to not just visualize, because sometimes people are not particularly visually orientated, but to appeal to how that particular person works with their own imagination, to be able to harness that. There are many, many research studies, scientific research studies, that the altering of just one single word in a particular sentence, which might be repetitively engaged in from an individual toward themselves, the changing of one single word can drastically alter the perception of that person and the outcome of whatever the circumstances might be that they're dealing with. How they react and respond can become very, very different just by shifting one single word. And usually those words are very little. Little words like am, or this, or my, always or never. And those things define our beliefs, our perception of who we are and how we respond to the world outside and other people. So if we can learn how to harness, how to gain greater control over the stories we tell ourselves, then it begins to shift and change the way the subconscious mind responds to various stimuli in our lives, in the outer world around us.
Mm. I suppose one could say that in terms of the beliefs and the beliefs that you tell about yourself.
One of the most common, if not the most common one that I've heard over all the years, repeated over and over and over and over and over and over, is I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
So common. In super high achieving people as well, sometimes. You know, somebody who could be highly successful in business or in other areas professionally in their lives, and yet deep down, that's what they've been telling themselves for their entire life, until they're taught how to change that, how to switch the record, you know, take that record off the record player and then put a different one on that doesn't keep telling them that they're not good enough.
And presumably within that as well, there's the subtext of the deeper levels of subconscious beliefs there, that somebody who's successful, who believes, however, that they're not good enough, one reason why they have been successful is because they didn't think they were good enough and they overexcel. It's them. It's how they feel about what success is. And unless you change your paradigm shift goalposts about what the meaning of success is and the values behind that, presumably they're never going to be happy.
Yeah, I agree with you absolutely. I often say to people, what quantifies success? What is success? Is it really about the job that we do, the salary we earn, the car we drive, the wife or husband or partner that we have, where we live, all of that sort of material stuff? Because you can have everything in the world of those kind of things and yet still be deeply, deeply troubled and deeply insecure. Potentially. So for me, what quantifies success is liberation from self-limiting beliefs, fear, anger, self-doubt, self-loathing, self-pity, liberation from all of those kind of lower emotional states that people get stuck in. And I hold my hands up and I totally admit always in a first session to the, what clients I work with is that for 20 years of my life, I did all of that unconsciously. I was stuck in some very, very limiting and negative patterns of internal dialogue and associated behaviors and beliefs about myself. But thankfully, I studied with somebody directly. His name was Dr. Vernon Bell. And he was a founder member of the British Association of Therapeutic Hypnotists in 1951. And I studied with him as his personal student for the last 4 years of his life. And he helped me to take a look at the ideas that I'd built up, the habits, the beliefs I'd built up about myself over the prior 20 years of my life. And we've all been hurt at times in our lives. We've all gone through various challenges, and sometimes people's challenges can be extremely traumatic and upsetting. And then we end up adopting beliefs about ourselves, like maybe it's because there's something wrong with us, or that we don't deserve happiness or love or whatever, or success. And we align our sense of self with those beliefs so strongly that we believe that's just who we are. And I was like that for 20 years of my life, unconsciously, completely stuck and feeling very low. But thankfully, somebody took time and the care to help me to change how I was communicating toward myself. And when we change this, then our experience of life, our perceptions of who we are and the life we're living begin to shift and change, because we're no longer limiting ourselves through our self-communications.
And you've mentioned the power of asking the right questions at the right time. And this might be very helpful for people listening, because some people looking at hypnotherapists, there is this myth that we all go around with pocket watches, swinging them and saying, look into my eyes, and you are feeling sleepy and all the rest of it. Now, we do that kind of work, not necessarily with pocket watches and definitely not in the way I have just described. Yes. You have, however, talked about the power of questions, particularly in the beginning and probably throughout the whole of the therapeutic process. Where does the so-called hypnosis bit, the part that maybe members of the general public would understand to be hypnosis, come in with you?
Well, I would say that there are two distinct approaches to the use of hypnosis therapy. One of them is the direct or authoritarian approach, which is quite an old school approach where the therapist would tell the person, you are now going to experience this, you're now feeling sleepy, and now you're experiencing this, and then this can lead to something else, and now you're in a deep hypnotic trance, and now this is going to change, and so on and so forth. So you're telling the person. Sometimes that works extremely well with certain people. The man I studied with, Vernon, he was very much of that authoritarian approach, but he was also extremely skillful in how the questions he asked. He was so skillful. So that the asking of the right questions can lead to the development of a rapport between the therapist. And this, the rapport is so important that the client trusts that the therapist understands what it is they've been dealing with, the challenges they've experienced, that they understand, and that they also have an understanding of how they work with people. So sometimes the authoritarian approach, or the direct approach, let's call it that, the direct approach, can be very useful. But I did some training with a gentleman called Stephen Brooks from British Hypnosis Research.
Yes, Stephen,
I've met on a number of occasions, and he's somebody who I respect very much, and I really like him as a person. He's a very lovely human being. And the influence from what I through him is particularly to do with the work of Milton Erickson and the indirect approach. So the indirect approach uses many different techniques to develop that rapport and to encourage the individual to trust that they already have within them the capacity to change, to shift their perceptions to not
be. In other words, somebody can leave your session, maybe coming out of that for the very first time ever in their lives, realizing that they can do what they thought they couldn't do.
That's right, yes. And usually in the first couple of sessions, that can happen purely through apparent conversation. I was trained in such a way as to steer the course of the dialogue I have with a client in such a way that by the end of that session, they're beginning to view, they're able to view their past challenges, maybe from a slightly different angle, so that, like you just said, so that the things where that they previously believed was not possible to change, they can begin to see, well, actually, maybe it can change if I change how I'm viewing things.
And they'll continue to do that from the moment they leave or the minute you finish with them online. And they'll continue, that'll continue as a continuing knock-on effect, if you like, the lasting benefits of hypnosis. And that's what you call sort of hypnosis, that changing your way of thinking in a genuine, very congruent way.
Yes.
And not so much, well, recognizing what they think and the statements, for example, that they say to themselves all the time, which aren't necessarily helpful. But what you're saying is the way you do it, you can get them to continue to, for the first time, possibly in their whole lives, change the way they think.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely, yes. And the first couple of sessions when I work with people involves a cognitive and very methodical approach. So at the end of the first session, I set a certain homework between the first session and the next session, which requires that the person has to develop what I refer to as the mindfulness of self-communication, to begin to ask themselves, well, what have I actually been saying to myself about myself? What are the things that no longer serve me, the ideas about myself and the habits I've gotten into of telling myself certain things about
without
myself.
Without realizing it.
So I say often to people, how can we possibly let go of something if we're not even aware that we've been carrying it? But once we become aware of what we've been carrying, then we have an opportunity to set that weight down if it no longer serves us and if it doesn't make sense to continue to carry forward. And then usually around the third session, I begin to work more with the more formal therapeutic application of hypnotic technique. And I don't even like the word hypnosis or hypnotherapy. I just tend to describe that as I help a person to harness the creative power of their imagination to help them shift their perspective on old memories of things that may have happened to them in the past so that those memories no longer have any mental or emotional magnetism to them, so that those memories become impotent, if you like, and they have no ability to drag the person back mentally and emotionally into those same states, so that they gain control over how they view those memories from a slightly or very detached perspective, so that they're no longer dragging those past feelings and mental torment, if you like, often into the present moment any longer, but they're able to accurately and honestly begin to look at those memories of things which have happened to them in the past and to understand that we don't live in the past any longer. We are here now in the present moment, and this is what's important. But very often we end up stuck in replaying old memories and communicating to ourselves about those troubling experiences in such a way that just perpetuates very negative feelings about ourselves.
If you always go around your life saying to yourself that you're not good enough, for example, are you saying that if you change your thoughts, you actually change your life experience, and the things that happen to you in your life, that the bad things that you feel have happened in your life are no longer happening with you, and you're beginning to see chinks of light of good things that are happening to you? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So if we're stuck in those negative communications, essentially we are putting barriers up that prevent us from either perceiving or seeing or feeling or experiencing all of the good things, because we believe we don't deserve to, or we can't, for all manner of very dubious reasons. And those, once we stop putting those barriers up, then various opportunities begin to present themselves. And we begin to magnetize toward ourselves a different kind of experience. So one of the things that my teacher Vernon would say to me is, words are not just words. Words give form to ideas and feelings. It's a little bit like giving birth. In which case, do you wish to give birth to monsters, as you have done with your words for many years, or not? And you just leave it there with that question that I was thinking, oh my God, how do I feel about that? You know, what have I been saying to myself?
It's that sudden realization, though. It can be absolutely cathartic to suddenly have this realization.
Mm.
Very powerful.
Yes. Yeah. Very transformational. Yes. But harnessing the creative power of our imaginations can be a wonderful skill, is a wonderful skill to acquire. Like I say, so that we harness our imagination so that it's a tool which serves us rather than us being a slave to negative imaginings.
Children do it all the time. And there are some adults, not many, but there are some adults I've worked with who find it very difficult because they develop this belief in adulthood that they can't play with imagination and visualization and so on. And I think some people find it extremely difficult. What would you say to somebody who finds it difficult?
I would say that in terms of imagination, often people think about visualizing things when they think of imagining things. Yeah. But for me, it's more important that as a therapist, I find the most appropriate way to encourage that individual to use their creative imagination to imagine how things feel, how things might feel. So it becomes feeling. I've studied for a good while with a particular teacher in a different field. I have an interest in martial arts, which is where I, through that, I met my teacher, Vernon. Mm-hmm. And this particular teacher says, he has a saying, which is, this is a feeling art. You can't think your way into correct feeling, but you can begin to feel your way into more correct thinking. And I believe that's very useful in this work. So encouraging a person to imagine a feeling, if they have difficulty visualizing something, that I believe is a deeper level of just visualizing a scene in the mind's eye.
Mm.
Evoke a feeling, an imagination of feeling. That's not the approach. Rather, I'd ask questions that would help that person to begin to imagine how it might feel if they were able to set that old weight down. How might they feel different? How would the new you look? How would they carry themselves? What would the look in their eyes be like, no longer carrying that old burden and that old weight, all those old troubled feelings or beliefs? How might that new you speak? What would the sound of their voice be like? How would other people respond to them? How would they carry themselves when they're walking? How would they listen to others? Yeah.
So getting them to rehearse.
A
different kind of scene, a different kind of mindset, and the life experience, how the life experience will change for the better.
Yeah, to explore possibilities.
What kind of people do you tend to see? What would the profile of your clients? It sounds like they're very, very wide and varied.
Very, yeah. So I've worked with many people who've experienced all kinds of trauma. Lots of people who've been sexually abused, people who've been raped or beaten in abusive relationships, people who've been in war zones, people who've been tortured, then people who've been through uncomfortable breakups, people who have been suffering from the effects of grief, because we're not taught how to deal with grief at all. And we all have to deal with that in many, many different ways in our lifetime. And so, a lot of that. Then people who have been stuck in self-abusive patterns of behavior, people with various addictions and compulsions, people with various things like OCD, people who have been repetitively addicted to let's say, gambling, for instance, or drinking, or, and I'm not saying that hypnotherapy in any way is a cure for that, but it can help dramatically in changing the way the person views themselves. So there's a client that I've been working with who has a testimonial on my website, and they talk very openly in the testimonial about the problem they had with alcohol, which was very debilitating, and how they've totally transformed their life through changing the way they communicate toward themselves about themselves. Yeah, there are a number of testimonials on the website from people who've been through some really extreme things in their lives. But then on the other hand, as I may have mentioned to you privately when we've spoken previously, there was a particular client years ago who had a really very strong chocolate addiction and a compulsion with it. And interestingly, it took more work to help them work out how to overcome that than in many cases, people who've been through some very severe trauma. But it's all relative. One person's suffering is relative compared to others. You know, there's no one person's suffering is greater than another's, really. It's all about how we perceive ourselves. Even in the cases of people who've been through really, really bad trauma, when they begin to realize that they've survived all of it, and what matters is how are they communicating with themselves now? And how can they liberate themselves from being stuck in a belief or beliefs about themselves based on what's happened to them? So we're not defined by the things that happen to us in our lives. What defines us is what we do with the experiences we've been through.
One of the biggest lessons, isn't it? And one of the biggest challenges that we find as therapists is to, as you were just saying there, to actually get the person you're with to begin to believe that. It can be very, very difficult sometimes. But that's where our skills, I suppose, and where your skill set comes in to actually begin to change that, which has been a lifetime belief.
Yeah, yeah, it is. That's where the skill of the therapist really is important. That's where it comes through. We've all been lost. And when we have at times where we've been lost, it's very difficult, very challenging for us to believe that anything else is possible because we've been so stuck. But then with the right kind of help, those beliefs can begin to change. We can begin to view things from a different perspective. And when we do, suddenly we don't feel as stuck as we were. The more we develop skill, the more distance we can create between the person who we have been, who's been troubled in those ways, and the person who we can become from now.
And do you find that and I'll use this term very generally, the environment in which you find your clients, and I'm talking about their support network, I find that some clients, they just want to be listened to. They don't feel supported by friends or family because that's just the way their networks are, or they've deliberately chosen to switch off and not talk about it with absolutely anyone. And for us just to be there, just be there for them. For some clients, that is the most important thing of all. Would you say you've had experiences like that with some of your clients, and how important do you think that is?
Yeah, many, many. Very often people would say that they've never spoken to another human being about the things that they've spoken about. Mm. And I would say particularly in the case of men, we tend to not speak about feelings. Even with close friends, very often we bottle things up. We say we're fine and maybe we're not. And sadly, there are many cases these days, much more than ever before, I think, of men taking their own lives because they haven't known who to speak to or who to turn to. And there's been a stigma here, an awful stigma, and that really needs to change. Men need to talk. They need to feel safe. They need to feel that it's okay to express feelings and doubts and fears and wobbles and insecurities. And it's through not being afraid to do that, that things can begin to change for the better.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I really am, Shane, because it's an absolute epidemic, especially here in the UK, 30-somethings. It's at the highest all-time rate. And to know that there's someone there like yourself, and the fact that you have mentioned it and that you are there for them, and that there are people out there, men in particular, and understand about their particular plight. And as you said, there is somebody there who can help. Anybody will be listening into this, as serendipitous as it might be. They might have decided to tune in and listen to this particular podcast. And the fact that you've mentioned that, I think, is extremely important. So I'm glad you did.
You're very welcome. I think it's very important as well.
Totally. Because would you agree that you're a hypnotherapist and you will help anyone? But there are certain sections of society, shall we say, certain genders and so on, and people from certain backgrounds who, especially the way things are at the moment, perhaps me more mental health, what with the decline in mental health services at the moment as well, need more help than anyone else than ever before.
Yeah, I believe that's true.
Yeah.
And we have a great responsibility in that way, really. You know, there's so many people who are struggling in all kinds of ways, who just need a little bit of a helping hand. They just need some responsible, caring, and experienced guidance. Thankfully, I had that from the person I studied with. They took the time and the care to help me. And I believe the world needs more people in it who've learned how to overcome unnecessary suffering. When I say unnecessary, I mean how we would unconsciously perpetuate negative habits, negative cycles of reaction, negative beliefs about ourselves. And if we learn how to overcome those things, then we're in a far better position to be able to help other people through the example that we set.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you shared a bit of your background as well as to how you felt that you had been for 20 years. But there's always a good reason from personal experience why somebody goes into the kind of work that we do now. And we've been there. And I think, would you agree that it's important to a client to an extent to understand that, look, I've been through what you've been through or something similar, and this is how I am now. I came out the other end. The way I did it might not be quite the same way as you're going to do it, but I'm here to help you. And it might not be a GPS turn by turn step, but it's certainly a blueprint with the overall map being the overall territory that you can follow to come through. And all of the kind of skills that you're describing, such as, for example, rapport, I'd like to ask you about that more in a moment, if I may, is all part of the package, if you will, all part of what you bring to the table to help people.
Yeah, I completely agree. I absolutely agree. So regarding rapport, what is it particularly?
Yeah, people might, well, in terms of the general public and their perceptions of hypnosis and how it works and so on, rapport, of course, is extremely important. The question to ask you is, in terms of rapport, what is it and how important is it, and how do we utilize it, or how do you utilize it? Because I think every therapist would, and other professional people in our similar kind of fields, would use it in a different way. But it's not a word that's bandied around often. So really, any more information you have to offer really on the idea of rapport and why it is so important?
Okay, for me, it's all based upon trust, that we need to trust. If we, as say, as a potential client, need to express certain things that are maybe very difficult to find the words to express, then we need to feel comfortable and safe in the company of that particular therapist. We need to be able to feel completely safe. So I say often, well, all the time with a new client, firstly, I'm no one's judge. Whatever the person tells me, I'm unshockable. I've heard so many things from so many people over the years. I'm unshockable. I care about people. Genuinely, it's in my nature. I care about people. I'm no one's judge. So whatever they say, I am not in a position to judge them for it. So they need to feel comfortable. So being a decent human being, I think, is really important. Being a caring, compassionate human being is really important in order to create an environment that naturally fosters a rapport between a client and a therapist. And there needs to be that. The removal of misconception and doubt, you know, so that the person can just relax enough and feel comfortable and safe enough to open up.
Because somebody coming to see you for the very first time may be very mistrustful because they've had bad experiences, or they feel that they have, that they subjectively feel that they've had bad experiences. What you're describing obviously is very essential. You find it comes naturally, easily.
I find it comes very naturally, yes. Yeah. I treat each new person as like a blank canvas. I'm not going to prejudge anything. I'm just accepting this is who they are. They're going to express themselves however they do. And my role is to create a safe space for them so that they feel comfortable and relaxed enough and trusting that they're in good company, that it's safe to open up and to begin to express themselves clearly, honestly, courageously, to be able to begin to make the most appropriate kind of change for them, to help them move forward.
Sure.
And to step down the old troubled self.
Sure. If somebody listening to this can really relate and see themselves as being perhaps one of these people that we've been talking of the people you like to help, what would your advice to them be if they are listening to you right now and relating to the kind of things you're saying? What would you say to them?
I'd say to them that if you're relating positively to some of the things we've been discussing, then that indicates that you're making sense of something that is of value. If you're making sense of something that's of value, then it makes sense to act upon it. And it's only by acting upon it that we begin to change. So we can intellectually understand that something makes sense, but unless we're prepared to act upon the sense that it makes and begin to make the physical effort to change ourselves, and sometimes that first step may be in picking up the telephone or making an appointment and, you know, putting your shoes and coat on and leaving the front door and going to see a person or arranging a suitable time and doing a call with the therapist online and having the courage to do that. I'd say take that first step, because that first step can potentially change your life for the better.
Okay.
It's when we don't act that we just remain stuck. So I have great respect for the people who choose to work with me, because it takes courage to step out of our daily lives and to begin to really take a good, honest look at ourselves and to begin to understand how it's possible to change. It takes courage. So I'd say take courage. Make that first step.
Do something.
Yeah, decide to do something about it.
Go to the website.
Communicate.
Just that one little step could be
completely life-changing.
The journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step.
And that's it, in a nutshell. Absolutely, Oliver. I agree.
And just a reminder again, your website is www.glastonbury-hypnotherapy.com.
That's correct, yes.
And if they want to explore things further on that site or with you, where would you suggest that they, in terms of doing something, where's the best place for them?
To the website, and then they can contact me via the contact details on the website.
Sure. And there'll be a link in the podcast details.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shane, for sharing your time with me and us, the listeners, in this first interview with each other. May not be the last either. So watch this space for future episodes. It's been a delight speaking with you, Shane, and I look forward to doing it again with you sometime very soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Oliver. It's also a great pleasure as well to speak with you about this. And it's a wonderful opportunity to enthuse about something that we're both very passionate about. So yeah, thank you very much. I look forward to speaking with you again.
Indeed. You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you, Shane.
Bye.
This is the online hypnotherapy.online podcast. To inform and right from now, create your future by continuing to use the limitless creative possibilities of your other than conscious mind. In the words of Albert Einstein, imagination is more important than knowledge. Bye for now.